o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show. Suns lose to the Wizards last night. And it's the comments of Monty Williams after the game that got a lot of people who were fans of the Suns talking last night and this morning. Here's Monty after the game. Why have the starters in particular struggled offensively as bad as they have?
Probably familiarity as far as lineups are concerned. And it's something that I got to take a deep look at and see if, you know, it's not worth a discussion on a number of things. But that group has not played well. I think before the Indiana game, it was not rated as a really good group. But I don't think they've had a ton of time to gel and to know what to expect or to know how to play off of each other.
Devin Booker, Gambo, took it one step further and said the bench basically has carried us in most of our wins. It hasn't been the starters. It has been the bench that has helped us to where we are.
We do have to figure it out. A lot of the games that we've won, you know, we've been carried by our bench, to be honest. So there is something that we need to fix there. You know, I feel like we will. Finding the flow, finding the chemistry, or whatever it is. So, you know, we have to take it day by day, and you know, that's the part of the NBA. You know, you have to make adjustments and find out what's going on. But we're too many games in, you know, for it to keep happening.
Do you expect any adjustments for the Phoenix Suns when it comes to their
starting
lineup?
I just don't know what is that adjustment? I mean, what do they want it to be? I mean, you want Cam over Jay Crowder? You want to put Cam in? You get a little bit, you know, a little bit more shooting, but you give up some defense. I would rather see this unit just continue to fight through it and work through it and figure it out, because I think I liked the starting lineup. I like Cam coming off the bench. I like Saric coming off the bench. I think Jay gives you shooting and defense. I think Booker's got to pick it up more, right? I mean, Booker did nothing, or he's doing nothing early in these games. You know, and he's a high percentage usage guy, Booker. He gets a lot of the shots on this team, you know? So 31.5% is Book, 31.5%. You know, Paul's at 22, Bridges is at 18, Crowder's at 16. I think a lot of it, to me, is Devin Booker's just got to, he's got to score earlier in the game and more often in the game. You know, I mean, he had a good game scoring last night if you just look at the box score, but a lot of that came late in the game when the game was over.
Here's Monty. I want to play one more. Then we really need to get into this. The adjustment to the lineup and what that he might have to make.
So it's something that I got to, you know, maybe make an adjustment. And, you know, ultimately I got to do what's best for the team. And it may, you know, mean I have to look at it enough and discuss it enough where we have to make some type of change. But it doesn't matter what change you make. If you're not sharing the ball and playing hard consistently, which has been our formula, I mean, you can put a lot of groups out there. It's just not going to work.
On our homepage, Gambo, arizonasports.com, our Sanderson Ford poll, not our individual poll here on the Burns and Gambo show, but our overall poll for the station. What should the Suns do with the starting lineup? Right now, leading the way, 39%. Put in Dario Saric for DeAndre Ayton.
It's so dumb. It's just not.
30%.
It's just so frustrating that everybody just – listen, DeAndre's offensive game is not developing. Okay, he's not a good offensive player. He's efficient, but he's not getting a lot of touches because they're no longer developing DeAndre. You know, last year and the year before, it was about developing DeAndre. Well, you weren't trying to win then. You were trying to develop DeAndre. Now you're trying to win basketball games, and you brought Chris Paul in and Jay Crowder, and you're trying to win. So DeAndre's your fourth option. But you want to take out DeAndre and put in Dario. Who's going to rebound the basketball? Like, how are you going to rebound? And I tweeted this out earlier. DeAndre Ayton is an elite defensive rebounder. He's ahead of Jokic. He's ahead of Anthony Davis. He's ahead of Sabonis. He's ahead of Joel Embiid. Now, I'm not saying that DeAndre Ayton is worthy of the number one pick, or that they shouldn't have drafted Luka now, or that. And I understand he doesn't dunk the ball as much as people want, and his offensive game leaves a lot to be desired. I get that. But defensively, he is one of the most efficient elite rebounders in the game. And if you take him out and you put Saric in, you're taking a huge step back. Huge step back. Saric is 22% of the defensive rebounds when he's in the game. DeAndre's 31.4. Like, Rudy Gobert's 31.9. I was speaking with an NBA executive today from another team, and I was really picking his brain on DeAndre. Really just picking his brain on DeAndre, you know, to go over this. And I'm not a numbers guy. You know I don't get these numbers. I don't get these numbers. I don't know how to get these numbers. So I had them given to me, and I discussed it for a long time with somebody in the NBA, very high up. And, you know, and when you look at it, it's, man, Rudy Gobert's at 31.9, DeAndre's at 31.4. Now, you know, he's never been a shot blocker, and he needs to block more shots. I agree. He needs to be more aggressive blocking shots. Offensively, he's not what we want him to be. I get it. But he's on the very low end of possessions. He's only getting about one out of every five possessions that he gets his hands on. That's 19% of the possessions. 19%. Last year, he was at 25.6. So that number's gone down quite a bit. Why? Because they added Chris Paul and Jay Crowder, and because Mikhail's developing. So he's at 19%. Booker's at 31.5%. Paul's at 22%. Saric is at 28% of the possessions when he's in the game. Bridges is at 18%. Crowder's at 16%. I understand the frustration with DeAndre offensively, but not defensively and rebounding. I think people are off base. I think they're too highly critical of that.
Look, I read all of these stories about lineup changes, and I just kind of went through the process of elimination. You're obviously not talking about Book. You're obviously not talking about Paul. I don't really think you're talking about Mikal Bridges with how well he's played so far this year. So you're basically talking about Jay Crowder or DeAndre Ayton. And I went through it's I'm glad to hear you say all of this, because DeAndre Ayton has left a lot to be desired, and they can't stop developing him. He's regressed. I mean, offensively, he has gone straight backwards in terms of his level of aggression around the hoop, in terms of his willingness to take it to the hoop, in terms of, I mean, we talk all the time, live by the three, die by the three. How do you counter that? You go at the rim more often. Who's best built on this team to play at the rim? DeAndre Ayton. He's offensively, it feels like the number one guy you would have to be able to counter all of these three-point shots when you've got a guy who should be able to do what
he wants.
But
they're not getting him the ball
at the rim.
But they're not getting him the ball because the other options are better. Chris Paul taking a jump shot is better than DeAndre. Now, you blame DeAndre's offensive efficiency on that.
Yeah, but part of the reason why they're not giving him the ball is because he's not earning the ball. He's taking 15-foot jump shots.
Yeah,
I don't want to give DeAndre Ayton the ball when he's taking 15-foot jump shots. I want to give DeAndre Ayton the ball when I know he's going to take it to the rack.
Yep.
I want to give DeAndre Ayton the ball when I know he's going to get on the foul line because he's being aggressive. If he's not doing that, why would I want to give him the ball if I'm the Phoenix Suns? I don't.
You don't.
I don't want to give the ball to that player.
You'd rather take the shot. You'd rather that Paul take the shot. Mikal Bridges is one of the most efficient players in the NBA. I mean, his numbers are, you know, Mikal Bridges is at 1.3 points per possession. That's amazing. That is insane, Mikal Bridges. 1.3 points per possession. Do you have any idea how good that is? Like, there's not that many players in the league that are at that level. DeAndre, he's a great rebounder, and he needs to be a great defensive player. And, you know, when he gets some opportunities around the basket, when other guys go to the bench, he'll get those opportunities. But right now, he is not a focal point of the option. He's their fourth option when he's on the court, and those guys don't want to go to him. People are being overly critical. I get it, but there's a lot of factors. How's he being utilized? Determine who he's playing with. What is the defense giving you? You know, his overall game, there is his defensive rebounding is elite. And you can't, that can't be argued. Like, it just cannot be argued that his defensive rebounding is not elite.
No, okay, but I agree with you. But what can be argued is whether that one factor is enough to ignore everything else. Okay, I mean, yes, that one thing he's good at. And I agree with you fundamentally. If you put Saric in for Ayton, you're asking for it defensively. I just don't think he can guard guys down low the way DeAndre Ayton can guard guys down low and rebound down low. I totally agree with that. But if that one thing is the only thing that he's good at, is that one thing enough to justify the presence that he has in the starting lineup?
Let's look at offensive rebounds. Dario Saric gets 2.9% of offensive rebounds. DeAndre gets 10%. Now, last year, DeAndre was at 13%. So he's definitely off from last year. But he grabs 10% of the offensive rebounds. Dario Saric is at 2.9%. I'm just saying, in my opinion, I don't think that that's the move you make. I don't think you take DeAndre out and put Dario Saric in. I don't think that helps you. I think that hurts you. I don't think it helps. I think it hurts. Now, maybe you do it, and maybe it works. I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're trying to light a fire under DeAndre or anything like that. I understand the frustration with him, and that he seems like he's a soft player, and he doesn't seem like he's aggressive enough, and I get it. I totally get it. And he may never live up to the hype of being the number one overall pick, which so many players in the league that were picked number one overall never do, okay? Half the guys picked number one usually don't live up to that hype. And he may never live up to the hype. Big men take a long time to develop. And at 22, I still think there's a lot of room for improvement. But I think what they need out of him is they need his rebounding. And they need him to be a presence on the defensive end. And he is doing that. And there's definitely games where it seems like he's lackadaisical. I'm not saying he's not, right? I'm not saying, oh, my God, he's the greatest center. Give him a max contract. No, right now, he's going to be a restricted agent in that fourth year. And I don't know what his value in this league is right now.
He's certainly
not going to get any big money. He's not going to get a max contract. He's not going to get a big money contract the way he's playing because of his lack of offensive ability. I get that. But for what this team needs, Bernsy, that defensive rebounding from DeAndre is at an elite level in this league.
The Arizona Cardinals going to pick right in the middle of the NFL draft second round. What kind of options are going to be there when they're on the clock with the 16th pick? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Welcome back on this Tuesday here on the Burns and Gambo Show. The college football season is officially done with Alabama's win last night, and because of that, as expected, a big rash of mock drafts kind of hitting the marketplace today, including Dane Brugler over at The Athletic with a very ambitious two-round mock. And I only say that because we haven't even had the scouting combine yet. I would imagine this is going to change 1,000 times. But if you're going to go deep into the second round, you got to give him credit for ambition. He's got the Cardinals with the 16th pick in his two-round mock, taking cornerback J.C. Horn out of South Carolina, writing that there is no question Horn needs to improve his discipline and finishing skills to stay on the field in the NFL, but he is a long, agile athlete with the instincts and competitive mentality that reminds some scouts of, wait for it, Aqib Talib, and he would give the Cardinals an immediate upgrade at the position. I was just waiting for Gambo to make some sort of a, oh, that's my guy noise.
I was just waiting for it.
Listen, there it was.
I love this pick. Now, I wouldn't count on him, you know, being a shutdown corner in year one, as we saw this year with Henderson and Okuda. It's hard. Like, it is hard. But 29 games, he spent 3 years there. He started 29 games at South Carolina. He's just a really good, solid physical player, and he went up against the, you know, great competition. I mean, in the SEC, he was up against the best competition. So, I mean, I would love that pick for the Cardinals. If he's there, that is a big time home run pick, in my opinion. I mean, he was, you know, look at the games he had against Auburn. He had such a great game against Auburn. He, again, big, physical, could end up being a shutdown type corner. That would be a great pick for them.
Yeah, you hate to. I get the impression that we're going to be talking about this a lot in the weeks and the probably months now leading up to the NFL draft, given that it's only, you know, January 12th. I suspect we're going to, depending on what they do in free agency and depending on what happens with Patrick Peterson, and even if they do bring back Patrick Peterson, it is hard. It's going to be hard for me not to look at every single mock draft that comes out and wonder if that mock drafter has the Cardinals taking a cornerback. It just feels like, and I know it's a trap you never want to fall into, drafting for need. You gotta get the very best player you possibly can. You bring up the Tommy Knight scenario all the time. But man, if there is a position in which the Cardinals need a young player over the next 10 years that they can kind of build things around, it is at the cornerback position. They've got nothing there in terms of youth. They don't. Byron Murphy's great in the slot, or at least he's good in the slot. They're very happy with him, but he's not an outside cornerback. It's one of the most important positions in football, and it feels like more than ever this might have to be a need draft to a certain extent for the Cardinals when it comes to that cornerback spot. Yeah. I don't know how else they're going to do it.
I mean, JC played six games this year, then he opted out, you know, to get ready for the draft. You know, he'll be one of the top SEC players taken. I mean, he'll be the, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh SEC player taken, one of the top defensive backs. Again, his size, 6'1", 205 pounds. He could press you. Good ball skills. Had the two picks against Auburn. Man, there's a lot to like about the pick. I just, like I said, I wouldn't say, okay, get rid of Patrick Peterson. I got my guy now and throw him out there and expect right away. I'd like to start him off a little bit slower, like be the number two cornerback for a year. And then after you've got some experience, then he can move over to be the number one guy.
Well, and that's why, and maybe this kind of goes hand in hand with this story, and this was something I meant to bring up a little bit ago when we were talking about free agency in the Cardinals, but Pro Football Focus matched a free agent with each team, one free agent each team should pursue. And for the Cardinals, and maybe this speaks to exactly what you said a second ago, they think the Cardinals should pursue cornerback William Jackson III, from the Cincinnati Bengals. He is the obvious choice with a combination of age on his side, talent, and history of quality play. His first season of playing time was one of the greatest statistical campaigns we have seen from a corner before his play faded away. But for his career, he has allowed just 52% of passes thrown his way to be caught for a passer rating of 85.3. Not bad, according to Pro Football Focus. It's going to be expensive. I think all cornerbacks in this market are going to be expensive, depending on the cap and where it's at and things like that. But this might be one of those deals, Gambo, for the Cardinals where they have to go sign one and they have to draft one to make sure they're set up at the position.
I think so. I mean, I think that's probably what I would think that they would do. The question is, I mean, do they have the money? You know, do they have the money to go do that? Now, you know, when you look at top free agents, you know, William Jackson is he's on that list of top free agents that'll be out there. But like you just mentioned, I mean, that could be expensive. That could be an expensive get. So I don't know. Pro Football Focus, you know, the love-hate, they graded him as the sixth best cornerback after his first full season. He did have that concussion at the end of the year and he had to miss some time. But I think that you have to address it in the draft, more importantly than free agency. But I would think that what you just said, they're probably going to do both.
Yeah, it just seems likely that would be something they would have to do both in both spots. I did mention it was a two-round mock. In the second round, they had the Arizona Cardinals taking Chaz Surratt, linebacker out of North Carolina. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know much about him at this point. I probably should have found out a little bit more about him, but I was focused more on the cornerback spot. But they've got the Cardinals going defense in the first two rounds. And again, folks, there are 10,000 things that are going to happen between now and when this draft actually happens to alter our perception of what the Cardinals will do, should do, and mock drafts are very rarely right in the first place. So it's just a conversation starter more than anything at this point.
I did a little bit of research on Chaz Surratt just to see what I could find out. He's a senior linebacker out of UNC. He was, you know, All-American status, first-team selection. He led the Tar Heels with 91 tackles, 6 sacks, and an interception. But what was interesting, what he transitioned to linebacker from quarterback prior to the 2019 season. So he was a quarterback, and they switched him over to linebacker, and he's been fantastic ever since they moved him to linebacker. So
that's one of the weirdest switches ever, man. Yeah. That's a strange.
Yeah.
What was?
Yeah. He was a quarterback, and then he ended up being, you know, Sporting News' All-America first team linebacker. He played great. He just, you know. So, I mean, listen, I mean, Logan Thomas is a really good tight end for Washington, but that seems more of a transition to go from quarterback to tight end. It seems less of a transition to go from quarterback to linebacker.
Boy, that Brandon Williams, that's all I can think about. When you mentioned that, all I can think about is Brandon Williams going from, what was it, running back to cornerback?
Yeah.
And how he had spent 1 year there, I think, at Texas A&M, and they took him, and it just never stuck.
Brought him in, Fedora. So when he got to UNC, he was a very highly recruited quarterback. But then he had injuries his first couple of years, and then there was a coaching change, and he decided to stay there, and the new coaches came in and said, hey, what do you think about linebacker? So he ended up being the starting linebacker, led the team in tackles, first team all ACC, and you know, it's a great story. So he was a quarterback up until last year.
Speaking of quarterbacks, Dane Brugler's two-round mock has two quarterbacks in the first two picks, three quarterbacks in the first four picks, four quarterbacks in the first eight picks. He's got Lawrence number one to the Jags, your guy Zach Wilson number two to the Jets, Justin Fields number four to the Falcons out of Ohio State, and Trey Lance, the cornerback out of North Dakota State, number eight to the Carolina Panthers.
Man, I
four
just
quarterbacks,
Fields
first
I just
picks.
Don't know about Fields, man. I don't know. I mean, I've seen him play great. I've seen him play awful. I've seen him play okay. I can't figure him out. I'm telling you right now, I can't figure him out. He scares me a lot.
I would not disagree with that. He makes me a little nervous. I'm not.
Yeah.
If he had a great game
him,
last night,
be...
I might have a different opinion of him. But I don't know. Buyer beware there. Buyer beware.
Yep. I agree. If my team drafted him, I'd be a little worried.
It's been less than a year since the Arizona Cardinals shipped David Johnson to Houston as part of the DeAndre Hopkins trade. Could there be a scenario that would see him return to the Arizona Cardinals? And is that something to want if you're the Arizona Cardinals? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Three 3:30 in the afternoon here on the Burns and Gambo Show. There are certain topics, certain ideas. We always get together, Gambo, Jordan, Sarah, myself, before the show, about an hour before the show, and we kind of talk about what we want to talk about every single day. Here's some ideas, here are these ideas, and things like that. And Gambo brought this idea to the table, and I'll just, behind the scenes, I'll tell everybody right now, we started to have a really interesting conversation about it, and at one point we're just like, you know what, stop. Let's just save this for the air. Let's not say anything. Let's not just stop talking about it. And let's just have this conversation on the radio and not off the radio, because this is very, very interesting. There was a story about the Houston Texans and whether they should move on from David Johnson. They've got a brand new general manager, which they will, of course. Yep. Of course they will. New incoming GM, Nick Caserio. He's trying to get some salary cap cash. He's looking at David Johnson's contract. He's got a $12 million cap hit. If they cut Johnson, the former Cardinal running back, before June 1st, they would save about $10 million, and it would only be a cap hit of $2 million for David Johnson. Gambo, I think we have to assume that David Johnson is going to get cut from the Houston Texans at some point with their new GM.
100%.
That leads to the next question.
Okay.
Would they?
Now David Johnson's a free agent, and you can have him for cheap. You don't got to pay him $12 million. You might be able to pay him $2 million. Do you want him back? Do you want him back? You could get him. I mean, if he comes, he's on the other side. He's over 30, and you don't have to pay him the money. You don't have to pay him that money anymore. It's gone. The Texans are going to take the hit. If they cut him before June 1st, they net a savings of $10 million. Cap hit's only 2.1. So David Johnson, after having a year in which he rushed for, 600 and something yards, it becomes a free agent. And I'm just saying, is he on your list? Would you think about bringing – now, I prefer to draft a running back with Chase. You know, I want to draft one second or third right. round. But I do think you need a veteran running back, you know, in case Chase gets banged up, Chase Edmonds. You know, would you consider bringing David Johnson back if the price tag is $2 to $2.5 million?
I would not. I would not. Would you?
I have to see what the market is and what other running backs are out there, but I might consider it. I mean, it didn't have the best ending out there, but you know, now things changed, right? He's no longer trying to live up to a contract that's paying him all that money. He'd be a backup running back who is really still very dynamic at catching the ball out of the backfield. He's still very good at it.
Well, in many ways, I was looking at his numbers, and yes, he was ranked 23rd in total rushing yards last year in the league. He had 691 rushing yards. Yards per carry, he was 4.7. Kenyon Drake was 4.0. Yards per game, he was only about 6 yards per game less than Kenyon Drake was last year for the Cardinals. That shocked me when I saw that. I'm looking at it right now. Yards per game, Kenyon Drake. 63.7. David Johnson, 57.6. They're only separated by about 6 yards.
Wow.
I don't, though, even though the price would be right, and even though the production would probably be on par to be a veteran guy to back up Chase Edmonds, I just think there's too much baggage. And you say things have changed. I don't think enough has changed around here to bring him back. Kyler's still the quarterback. Cliff is still the coach. Keim is still the general manager. I don't think he'd want to come back. I mean, if he's a free agent, if he gets cut and he has choices of where to go, I don't know, David. I'm just speculating here. I don't think he would want to come back because not enough has changed from when he was here. I don't think he would feel all that welcome to come back, to be honest with you, based off of how it ended. And I think I'd rather have a running back who comes in here with a fresh start, a clean mind, and maybe not as much baggage as David might bring with him if he were to come back.
Yeah,
so for me, I'm a no.
I would prefer that. I mean, I would prefer that if that guy's available. So when you start to look at the free agent, you know, the free agent running backs, you know, look, you know, Kenyon Drake's at the top of the list. And then you start to look at all these other guys. I mean, you know, Matt Breida, Carlos Hyde, you know, Leonard Fournette. This, you know, there's probably a bunch of guys that I would want before I would want him. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but you know, you can't deny that he is still he's still good at catching the ball out of the backfield, and that could be a good, you know, check down for Kyler if he's here. He's only 29 years old. Jeez, I thought he was old.
He turns 30 in December, so he would spend most of the season at the age of 29. Yeah, so he's right on the fringe.
Right. So he had 46 receptions this year out of the backfield, 46 catches this year. So he could still catch the ball out of the backfield. You know, running-wise, he averaged 4.7 yards per carry this year. That's the highest in his career. He averaged 4.7 yards per carry for the Texans. He never averaged that much with the Cardinals.
No,
I'm just bringing it up because when he gets cut, he's, you know, nobody's going to sign him to a contract that's going to pay him a lot of money. He's probably going to be one of the cheaper options out there. He didn't have a lot of wear and tear the last 2 years. It was only the last 2 years combined, he had 241 attempts combined in 2 years. Not a lot of wear and tear. Can catch the ball. The knock here was, oh, he's afraid of contact. Look, he wouldn't come here to be the featured back. He wouldn't be that guy. He would be a role player on this team if you brought him back.
Yeah, I think part of the reason, too, why I wouldn't is, and I don't know if you, I remember we talked about this a lot. One of the theories I kind of subscribe to is to his struggles here in Arizona was I felt like he really struggled with not ever knowing for sure whether he was going to run the ball or not. And by that, I mean Kyler puts the ball in his belly and yet has the option to pull it out and keep it himself or leave it there. And I always kind of felt that that was part of why David struggled in this offense under Kyler Murray, was because he just was never quite sure whether the ball was going to be in his hands or not. I hear what you're saying. And look, I'm not a hard, firm no on it. I just think that, number one, I don't know if he would want to come back. Number two, I would rather have somebody who comes in here who doesn't have kind of the baggage, the recent baggage that David Johnson would. And number three, to your point, I do think that there are going to be lots of running backs with similar skills who are going to be available this offseason because I think the league is more and more catching on to the idea of replaceability at that position, right? About, you know, hey, running backs are very rental cars, the metaphor you love to use, right? I think there's going to be a lot of cars to choose from this offseason. I think there are always going to be, from this point forward, a lot of cars to choose from to rent if you're looking for a running back. And I would bet that there are going to be guys out there who are just, when it's all said and done, better options who don't come in here with a past like David Johnson does, who come in here kind of clean and fresh. He'd be a good option. I think it'd be a really interesting concept. I just rather would have somebody who comes in here kind of clean.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't disagree. I think if you get into the free agent running backs and you've got a list of guys, you know, he's not going to be 30th on your list. Because he averaged 4.7 yards per carry, and he's 29, and he catches the ball out of the backfield. So if you were just judging it on talent, you know, he might be the fifth best running back you have. And if you don't get the other four, do you pass on him? and go get somebody who you think is not as good? Again, just and I'm just asking the question because I don't know. You bring up great points. There's some baggage. It didn't end very well. But this organization has always brought back players. Think about how many players have come back. How many times did Carlos Dansby come back? You know?
Yeah.
Well, so they bring back players.
One that comes to mind. Yeah.
Yeah, they brought back several players they bring back. Guys that leave and then they Marcus Golden. Marcus Golden left. Marcus Golden came back.
Sure.
You know, so
and Steve Keim, look, he said this earlier in the year. He's still rooting for David Johnson.
I love David Johnson. I mean, he is a wonderful person. I know he has that talent and ability in him. And I thought early on, especially that touchdown run, it was vintage David Johnson with the lateral jump cut. He showed a little patience and then the burst and the acceleration. So I'm happy for him. I hope he has success. Anytime that you draft a young man and you develop a relationship, there's an emotional attachment to him. And I'll continue to follow him throughout his career.
For perspective, that soundbite was given the day after the season opener when the Texans played the Chiefs back in September. So the touchdown run he's referring to comes from that. I don't know. I don't even know if he'd want to come back. You know, if he had a choice, I'm not sure he would even choose.
But that's the question. Does he have choices? Does he have choices? I mean, how many teams are going to go out there? And, he's going to get cut. They're going to save $10 million on their cap. He's going to be a 29-year-old free agent running back coming off of 4.7 yards per carry who can get you 50 catches out of the backfield. I'm just saying, again, I understand everything you said about the baggage and the you want to go down that route, but the Cardinals didn't burn any bridges with him. He may have tried to burn a bridge, but I don't think the Cardinals burned any. I'm just saying, just keep it in the back of your mind. Maybe it's an option for them. I don't know.
Devontae Smith put on a clinic last night in the national championship game. Is that performance enough from the Heisman winner to put him atop or near the top of the NFL draft? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
On a second down and 8 from the 44-yard line. Mack straight drop. Mack looks long. Mack finds Devontae behind the defense. He is in for a touchdown. Thank you, Mr. Heisman. Thank you, Mr. O'Brien, and Unitas Award winner. What a combination. 44 yards, touchdown, Alabama.
From the game last night in Gambo, in fortuitous timing to say the least, PTI right now on ESPN having a conversation. What should the Jets do at number 2, Fields or Devontae Smith? It's like they knew. It's like they knew what we were going to talk about here on the Burns and Gambo show because he... You know, when you're the first wide receiver to win the Heisman in 29 years, there are going to be expectations. And for him to do what he did while basically playing a half of football, I would say Devontae Smith has now put himself in conversations that he probably wasn't in 48 hours ago.
Yeah. We all got to see on the national stage just how great this kid is. I mean, like electric great. I'm not a fan of taking a wide receiver, you know, number 1, number 2, number 3 overall. I just, you know, there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of receivers. He's the best receiver, but there are a lot of other receivers that could be really good. But man, you know, you just, is he that special of a talent that you can't pass on him? Is he that special? I mean, the Falcons haven't won a Super Bowl with Julio Jones. The Lions with Calvin Johnson didn't go anywhere. Like, there's been some unbelievable receivers that haven't done anything. I still think that if you love a quarterback there, you go quarterback. If not, you got that offensive lineman out of Oregon. You build the trenches. You make sure you have a great offensive line so you can run the football and pass protect. I get it, man. It's going to be hard to pass on this kid. It's going to be hard to pass on him for sure. But, man, I don't know that I'm the biggest fan of taking a wide receiver that early.
I'm usually not either. I think about Larry Fitzgerald, right? Number 3 pick overall his year, and he didn't win him a Super Bowl, but got him to a Super Bowl, and certainly was a player who provided more than enough value over his years. Now, I'm not saying Devontae Smith is going to be Larry Fitzgerald. It just depends on the guy, right? And it depends on the kind of career that evolves from the guy. I'm typically with you. I feel like wide receivers, you can, you know, DK Metcalf can, I believe, name every single wide receiver who was taken ahead of him in the draft a couple of years ago, including one, Andy Isabella, from the Arizona Cardinals. There is typically depth at that position. You can find players later in the draft. I don't know. I number two overall, when Sam Darnold is your quarterback, boy, I tend to think you're probably better off going quarterback if you're the Jets at that point than you would Devontae Smith.
Yeah, you just wonder, man. Every like Keyshawn Johnson, our boy Keyshawn Johnson, he went number one overall, right? Wasn't Keyshawn the number one overall pick in the draft?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was
a long time
ago. He was good, but I just, wide receiver's going to catch really great ones, going to catch seven passes a game. Larry Fitzgerald was a really good pick where the Cardinals got him. What was that, third?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a great pick. But a wide receiver's going to touch the ball seven times a game. An offensive lineman, man, that guy impacts everything you do on every single play. A quarterback every single play. I loved watching that kid play last night. I mean, that was and then they kept throwing all these. He's got more yards than the entire Ohio State team at the half. I'm like, oh man, he was having himself again. Couldn't cover him. Like, yeah. It was like, well, what could Ohio State do? Nothing. It doesn't matter. Yeah, but they had linebackers on him. Okay, that's a mistake to put a linebacker on him. But even when they had corners and safeties on him, they couldn't cover him. Like, they couldn't cover him. They didn't have a player or players good enough to cover him. That was it. He's got this gear, right? He runs and it looks like he's just jogging. And then, boom, he has this accelerator. Like, he presses those little burner buttons on the side, and he just goes. And I love him. I do. But, something about taking a wide receiver that early scares me.
There are four positions that I feel like are essential to have. And this isn't like I'm coming up with anything that nobody has said before. There are four positions that are essential for success in the NFL. You need a good quarterback. You need a good left tackle. You need a good edge rusher, and you need a good cornerback. If you have those four, you have the foundation to build something really special. And I don't believe that wide receiver is one of those core positions, right? One of those, man, we just have to have this guy of the future. It's got a more of a replaceability kind of element to it. So would I rather, you know, an offensive lineman or a cornerback or a guy who can get to the quarterback because of the value that those guys have? Yeah, I would. Now, he's a special player. There's no question about that. Here's Nick Saban after the game.
Well, he's a unique person in the kind of leadership that he has, the kind of competitive spirit he has. And I think Smitty would be successful in any endeavor that he wanted to try, you know, in his life. He's obviously going to have a career as a football player. But I think he created a lot of value for himself by coming back. I think sometimes people don't realize how much value guys create going from the second to, you know, sure, maybe a top 10 pick or whatever. Which the way he competed and played this year, and he's the ultimate team guy. I mean, he sets a great example for his teammates. He cares about his teammates, sets a great example for him every day. And I tell you, he's hard to beat. I mean, I just love that guy.
Look, if we're talking about guys who increased their value with how well they performed this past year for Alabama, I'm going to throw you a curveball here. How about Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator for Bama? I know he's parlayed that already into the Texas head coaching job, and that's a good gig. That's a big gig. That offense was historically special for Alabama, and it feels like Sark, I mean, just watching him call plays, I think our buddy Mike Jarecki tweeted out last night, it just felt like he was one or two plays ahead of the Ohio State all defense all night. That guy, from where he was to what he can do with it now, really seems to have rebuilt his career with his brief time spent in Tuscaloosa, yeah, and what he's done with Alabama.
And Saban loves those resurrection projects, doesn't
he?
Oh,
big time, right?
Because you're going to go, Bill O'Brien is going to become the new offensive coordinator for Alabama. They're going to go, Bill O'Brien is going to be the new OC.
Yeah, that's the word. But whether it was Lane Kiffin, whether it was Major Applewhite is on his staff, right? I mean, he's the amount of success that Saban has had over the last 12 years. When you look at the number of coordinators, offensive and defensive, there's not been any continuity with Alabama at all outside of Nick Saban, right? He's been the constant. But yeah, the coordinators around him, he goes through them constantly. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to Nick Saban.
No, and listen, we were talking about Doug Peterson yesterday. and all like the great guys that he had on his staff, Jim Schwartz when they won the Super Bowl, and Frank Reich, and the quarterback's coach that interviewed here. Well, what was his name? I can't remember his name. Anyway, but they had like a really good staff with the Eagles when they won that Super Bowl, and Peterson wasn't able to duplicate that staff.
The name was right on the tip of my tongue. I just had it and I lost it.
It's this Italian guy.
DeFilippo.
Yeah, right. DeFilippo. You had Frank Reich. You had DeFilippo. You had Schwartz. He had a great staff. And now he doesn't have a great staff. And so you got to change. Yeah, staffs are important. I don't know how Saban does it, but he just always seems to make the right picks with all of these guys.
The Phoenix Suns lost in embarrassing fashion last night in Washington, and now they might need to worry if the coronavirus has followed them home. We'll tell you all about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.